and welcome to the Facedowns, your source for TCG news and all things Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm Lucas.
I'm Ruben.
And I'm Jay.
And here it is, gals. Today.
It came out today, not a week ago.
Yeah, not on Thursday, but today.
You didn't see nothing.
We finally have the list.
We do.
Now, I mean, it's time. Yeah. We've waited. We've waited a long periodically time.
And I'd like to personally thank all of our fans for not reading the ban list until we put out the podcast, so you'd still be surprised when we review it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. So thankful to all of you who are dedicated to our listeners, who
exactly.
are dedicated to honest and genuine reactions as a
first time
to 96 hours of consuming this content and preparing for a future format.
We've not looked at it either. This is our first time.
Honest
I can't
reaction.
Wait. Honest reaction,
yeah,
for sure.
This is crazy. I mean, first of all, it's pretty surprising that we did get a list
on a Thursday.
At all. A lot of people were on a Thursday.
As opposed to never.
Well, a lot of people were just like, well, it's just not showing up, is it? So realistically, that's people are glad to see it. Of course, everyone's YouTube was bombarded with the classic 600 uploads of oh my god, ban list.
And can I just say, YouTube content, like, I'm sorry, the clicks matter, get your money. It gets so bad around a ban list. I just can't stand that everyone just does a ban list reaction where it's them reading the ban list. I get that it's like the thing you have to do, and I'm not besmirching anyone for it, but it's just like that whole day I'm like, I guess I'm not watching YouTube because I've seen the ban list. I know what. Oh wait, spoilers. I
haven't seen the ban list.
In a sort of daydream, I imagined the ban list could be certain. This bit sucks. Yeah, we've read the ban list, and this podcast is going to be less of a reaction
and more of an analysis.
Yeah, because we can't outdo Team Samurai. Like, we're just not going to be able to pog as hard as that man can pog.
We are not Lithium uploading videos, being the second person to upload banless reactions on YouTube, according to my subscriber metric.
And I don't have the energy to run and jump out of the room when I see that Protoss is... Well, I mean...
When something's touched or adjusted on ban list.
Joe's old and tired. He doesn't have the heart to pog at a ban list anymore.
Needs a cup of coffee, needs to get his glasses on, needs to have a quick triple read before he can really create a reaction.
We should save this stuff for skits. We got good stuff coming up.
We do indeed. So I guess like the TLDR of the ban list, we had, I believe...
Whoa, hang on. We'll get the video up and then we'll talk about the ban list.
I mean, so we've got quite a bit of adjustments. I think it's really nice to see this list actually finally happen. So it is effective from February 7th. So that'll be next week, actually. Today, as of time of recording, will be the 7th of Feb. On the Monday. Notably, the next update will be in a few months. No date, no time frame. So that's another change, which is quite frustrating.
I'm personally happy they've stopped lying. What's the point of having a date if it doesn't come out on the date, or it comes out before that date? Like, it never mattered, so
it's,
I think it's fair for them.
Only a week or two out, though, right? Like, this, we're like, when is it? Is it going to be in 5 months' time? Is it going to be in 2 months' time? Like,
this does mess with YugiTube that we can't, preempt the ban list with content. It's just gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, your safe bit will always be around the next core set, so obviously this ban list is coming into effect the week of Battle of Chaos releasing, so your good assumption could be that we might see some adjustments when Dimension Force comes out in May. So realistically, this is going to be like a nice 3 month format, potentially four depending on if they need to do any adjustments, but yeah, no date as to when the next adjustment will be. However, speaking of adjustments, we can start at the very top. We see Arch Nemesis Protoss ban.
We called this.
Yeah, I called this on the painful choice. This was something I absolutely saw going.
1 point for Ruben.
And I think that this makes sense. Realistically, we all talked about it. It is the unfair win button. So,
yep. Good riddance.
Yeah. Next was the... Oh, yes, John.
Carry on. No, it's fine. I agree.
We're going to run through it quick fire.
Yeah. Quick fire.
We're going to talk about the impacts of the ban list. We've all seen the reaction, so we're just going to quickly get people up to speed.
So we had Arch Nemesis Protoss ban. We had Eva move from 1 to 0.
One card plus 2. Good riddance.
Get rid of the fairies. We saw The Smaug Bird of Sovereignty go, targeting protection.
Stupid
unbelievably
card.
Unbelievably ridiculous.
Joe, thoughts on Smaug? Sad? Uh-huh. Happy? Cool.
Anyway. Thanks, Nelson. And then finally, to be honest, this is probably the only one I want to talk about. Imperial Order banned. Now, this was something, I mean, I spoke about on the ban list. I didn't believe that they would ban a card they errated. And that was never, like, that was never based on, like, principle. It's just a personal belief. Yu-Gi-Oh! Potentially may be a bit more forthcoming with admitting their errors, and Imperial Order apparently seems to be one of them. All in all, I think this makes sense that this card in particular is going. It won a YCS, not Sword Soul. And it's crazy. The card's shuts off a third of Yu-Gi-Oh! So you better get into it. Or you better not anymore, because it's gone.
They freaking killed that old man.
Yeah.
They killed him. They shot him outside like an old horse.
Ray took him out back.
They were like, you've done your time. You can go to rest now.
Four bans. Quick thoughts. Anything you would have liked to see banned?
Nah. It's all good.
I think maybe personally.
Fractal.
Mystic line, but that's more to one than banned. So, yeah. No, I was pretty happy
with
it.
Yeah. I was pretty happy with these bands. They kind of addressed a lot of the things. Moving on to limits.
Scythe
would have been good.
Scythe's a good one. Verte, also potentially another one. Moving on to limits. A lot of four things taken off the forbidden list.
Yeah, this is the master duel list.
Yeah, like this is the... Oh, you guys like that game? I guess we can bring some of that to the real life. So the first one was Astrograph Sorcerer from 0 to 1. Super funky, super fresh. No Electromite, so less cool. However, there's still ways to use Astrograph, and Wavering Eyes is right back in. Next, we had Destrudo, the Lost Dragon's Frisian from 0 to 1. Not really that crazy, I'm not going to lie. With Ancient Fairy Dragon still not being around, realistically, your next best bet is like a Yahzee. And even then...
The freest Hulk ever.
It is the freest Hulk ever. But even then, like, a Yahzee and a Synchro deck isn't crazy just because you need something else to pop. But I think this one's going to have, like, a lot of cooking to do with. Like, a lot of labbing, a lot of inclusions. It's cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see it back. It's great in Pendulum.
Yeah, it's very good. It bypasses the V-dub restriction, which is nice. It lets you get access to low-level tuners in that deck, which is pretty strong. Especially if you target a 3, it becomes a 4, then you can use it and a 6 to make Baron.
Yep, your Lily. Yeah.
Kind of mess with that.
I don't know. It's kind of a strange choice to bring back now, though. Like, I don't know. It's fine because the cost of it is kind of high, like 4K. And the way you're using it now, I don't know if you're using it in the way it was used before, where it just helped you set up an unbreakable board, where now it kind of just adds to the plays a little bit. Maybe. I don't know. We'll
can
see
we break this in Dinorphia?
Surely.
Pay 25 life points, summon Destrudo. Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, surely. Then we had Fairytale Snow, 0 to 1. I think everyone was super scared of this and then realized that we don't have grass because that's at 3 in Master Duel. Realistically,
we don't have Colossus.
What?
Like, Thunder Dragon is not a very good deck, so this card is not a huge problem.
I mean, we are about to discuss that later on, but, you know, Fairytale Snow is less scary because there's not a lot of ways to just vomit your deck into the grave, especially with a further adjustment made.
Yeah.
However, this is cool. Not once per chain spellcaster. That's really great interruption. Really good at wiping things off the board. Dodges a lot of targeting interruption. It's cool. It's useful, and I think it's a build around, not a build with.
Yeah, and the thing that's really broken about it in Tedra is that's the only deck you can banish from hand, and it's like a straight upgrade. Like, banishing a Roar or a Hawk from hand is just good. So,
and then chain blocking those because of your opponents or something, you can book it as the last thing in the chain.
But there isn't really a deck besides Chaos Lightsworn that mills a ton.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still really good in that deck. I mean, Chaos Ruler, the Dragon Ruler of Chaos, whatever, the Synchro, is nuts with this card. So I could see that. Being a deck, potentially.
The other thing they did, I mean, I'm going to kind of spoiler alert here, is the Monster Gate and other things. Like, you can't just mill your deck to the grave anymore. So it's a bit like, You know, we'll see how it goes. Someone might come up with some broken deck or combo that can abuse it, but I just don't really see it myself. Yeah.
Japan got 3 Reasoning, 3 Monster Gate, and 3 Snow.
And 2 grass.
And Infernoid's not doing too much, so we can rest easy.
And then the final unhit from the bans was Lunalight Tiger from 0 to 1. This is a cool thing.
This is,
this has been dead for 2 years, unfortunately. However, that was at a different time. You know, that was 3 Tenki and a lot of Xyz running around. Zexal was a S0 Utopic Zexal was kind of nutted. And a lot more like rank 4 payoffs are probably a lot more kind of prevalent. This is still a really powerful card. Not once per turn bounces. Lunalites love to bounce their cards to reactivate Tigers. And it floats on destruction, so it's really useful. But the existence of one Tiger and one Tenki potentially limits the accessibility of the card. I mean, I've seen a lot of like Tri-Brigade Lunalite potentially running around. I think this is a cool bringback, though. Like, it's a build around. It's for a deck. Like, again, it's you can't just splash it into everything. And if you want to be using normal Summon Collider Chick effects, you can't use Adventure.
Yeah. Moving on, Lyrilisk Recital Starling. The reason I put down the deck is that I knew they were going to nuke it, and boy, did they. So not only did they put Simorgh, the Link 3 that gave protection, and an Omni Negate from the deck, they also limited the Searcher, and this is kind of a big deal.
It's the Draco Future play that just like becomes a lot worse in the fact that you don't get your +2 while making it. And the fact that if you lose one Starling, it's kind of hard to grind back and recover from, I suppose. So it was quite like I was surprised that they went for both at this stage, considering how new Lurulisk was.
Yeah, they really only got one format to use their new support before they just got slaughtered.
Yeah, I think it's now just going to be an engine again, but it's kind of sad to see. I think that like
you can still play the good birds in Tri-Brigade without like the full bird up stuff.
Yeah, and if you wanted to still utilize the Lyrilisk Tri-Brigade, like Promenade Thrush is arguably potentially a better going second Xyz because it can bounce a back row. But really going first is a lot less advantage gain comp, like partnered with the ability to access such a unique negate in being Utopic Draco Future.
I think the biggest thing is that unless you open exactly Turquoise Cobalt, which is not guaranteed, if they Ash your first recital, that's a pass 10, like almost always. Because you need Sapphire and another level 1 in hand, so you'd have to have opened like the absolute stones.
But it's like Turquoise Cobalt Bird Call. Like you have to.
Well, Turquoise Cobalt still does it, but like Turquoise barrel. Plus a barrel into recital that gets ashed, that's the end of the turn. Like no way are you playing through that. And I think that's huge because like there were instances in which previous boards would still have been able to extend to another recital to maybe get things going. But in that instance, now you're just not getting the Nurvel. You're probably ending on, at most, Utopic Draco with Ensemble, which is much, much weaker. Mm. And you don't have targeting protection, which I think is like the biggest thing.
You're forced to put your Cobalt underneath it, so you get less material if you choose to revive a Sapphire with the Beryl Canary as opposed to the Cobalt.
And no Omni unless you set up Oath. Like, unless you get Oath, no Spell Trap negates in the entire deck.
Yeah.
Which is really, really rough.
I'd like to quickly just shout out Tash there as well, one of the local players who
spent
2 hours with the night before the ban list on her first night hobby, helping build her bird up deck ready for the freebie free. And I said to her, look, you know, they might hit one of the pieces. I'm not sure what one, but I feel like you'll be all right. And then I wake up the next morning and there's just a message saying, Joe, not the birds.
And I'm it wasn't all right. I'm so
the birds.
Well, but welcome to Yu-Gi-Oh! I mean, this is part of the experience, and I knew this was the deck that I picked up originally. It was going to get hit the hardest, because that always happens with the decks that I choose. Ruben's been playing Striker, and they're just, like, getting stuff off the list, like, it's just nonstop.
It's candy for Christmas.
Love. Yeah, if I play a meta deck, it's getting banned, so just keep that in mind if you listen to the podcast. Don't play what I play. I'm telling you, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, moving on to limits. Like Joe said, Monster Gate was put to one. And I think this was, again, preemptively because of the snow bringback. You know, it's like trying to test the waters and see how snow actually feels.
This is a dumb hit.
Monster Gate. No, Monster Gate's fine. Like, I think like it going to one is absolutely fine to see it. It was similar to when they actually brought back Dryden. They limited Barrage. Because Barrage was at 3, and then Dryden came back and they put Barrage to 1. Spoiler alert, Dryden's still good.
I don't know. My hot take is that they should probably limit cards that have been seeing play in literally any meta deck. And I don't think bringing back one snow is going to break Infernoid so hard they have to limit this card.
I would like to see it.
Right?
I would like to see it.
Who else is playing Monster Gate?
No one. Yeah.
No one.
Ruin Force.
Yeah, Ruin Force is DK. Yeah.
A bad deck. A bad deck.
Yeah.
A
top 4 in an event. That's what
I'm saying,
deck.
Though, is I think it's this is where... Konami almost needs to publish something alongside the ban list that explains the choice of their hits and why, to an extent, you know, like, because if they just said, hey, look, we limited Monster Gate because we don't want FTKs at all our events because of, we all remember the Dark World FTK, how that kind of reflected on them live and of extreme. Like, I guess it might just be, we don't want to get that again. So like, but if they just said that, like, people would be like, oh yeah, Monster Gate's at one, whatever, moving on, you know?
Or even like, oh, we've decided to bring back Fairy Tail Snow, so as a countermeasure to prevent an excess of tribute and graveyard filling strategies, we've decided to put Monster Gate to one to see how Snow's return potentially may impact the meta.
Wait, no, I've got it.
OCG do it. OCG do it. They literally put descriptions as to what they hit.
Yeah. No, they were actually, I've worked it out. They were afraid of Megalith Drytron featuring Snow playing three Monster Gate. That's clearly what they were afraid of.
Exactly. Yeah, milling block dragon. And then probably the most talked about hit on the limited list is a good old little card that says draw two, Pot of Desires.
Pot of Desires.
From 3-1.
This is an OCG hit. This is like the most Japan hit ever.
It was... I can understand why, like, because if you look at the top 32 and, like, most breakdowns, most people were on three desires at the moment.
Like, every deck was on three desires, yeah. So even the ones playing one-offs were just like, eh.
Like, eh, you know, if you banish it, you know, whatever. Like, and I can see why they've done it. But it does hurt the budget player big time.
Absolutely. Because this essentially... It completely mitigates the idea of like a deck vomiting like the three ofs. Because what we've seen in past is that a lot of archetypes that are coming out in strategies, things like Tribal Gate, things like Sword Soul, things like Virtual World, you can very confidently put in play sets of your engine and your desires because you're statistically very unlikely to remove all three copies of a particular card. It's not impossible, but it is very unlikely to happen. So I think that this one is definitely, it is very OCG. In fact, Jason, a very strong OCG affiliated player, very much believes that this is going to be the way that Japan will adjust their next list, is put desires to one. It is unfortunate. Like you said, this is a very budget-friendly option. It is a really incredible way to access, you know, some of the most impactful cards in your deck, one of the best cards to prompt interaction out of your opponent's hand, because the sheer plus one is so powerful. It is so powerful. You know, we talk about Pot of Greed. It's a legitimate plus one with no downside. And, you know, some people, neg 13, Pot of Desires. Honestly, it is one of the scariest cards to see your opponent use going second. Like, they will just start with a seven card hand if you have no interruption. And the difference between six and seven is one, and that one can make all the difference.
Yeah, considering how much work you have to put in to get one negate, one extra card is just one extra negate, right? Like, that's kind of how this works out.
Because it's always that card that I lead with it a lot of the time, because I'm like, well, if this is going to resolve, I get another two cards. If it doesn't resolve, they burn a negate on it. So it's completely fine. Like, and it is broken going second. It's so good.
I think this card definitely fits into the... It seems like it doesn't because it's such a meme, but it fits into the pedigree of cards that we consider so strong that they need to stay at one. And I think there was a time that deck building was different and we played a lot more tech cards. If you think think like Mermaid Orcus, right? Like, you had to play the one, you know, you were playing like small amounts of the Orcus cards with another engine with a bunch of any two card enablers, like the Trickstar stuff. All of those cards, you're just playing like one-offs, right? One Candina, you know, often one Orcus Nightmare just to reduce the chance that you draw into it. And in decks like that, Desires wasn't seen like as prominently. And I think as we've moved forward, deck design from Konami has pushed way, way harder into these max out on everything three of decks, Tri-Brigade Lurulisk, Sword Soul, Tenyi, Virtual World, where you can just play three of everything. This card legitimately does just read Pot of Greed. Like, change my mind. It is exactly the same card. And by that metric, it being at one feels like an extremely powerful play, but it's not something you're going to have to deal with every game. So it, to me, feels in the realm of things like Monster Reborn, Harpy's Feather Duster. Like, if you draw it, congratulations, you're insane. You get a plus one, you know?
Yeah. And it's potentially going to see no play at all now because like people had to build around desires. And if you're now taking in more one-offs and stuff, like you might see it drop off because you'll be like, well, what's the point of having the one desires to like then have a potential, you know, to lose your other one-off? So I don't know. Like it probably still will be played because it is just a plus one in a card.
Yeah, I find it so hard to believe that Sword Soul will cut desires completely when there's nothing they really want to take in.
Like you don't want to lose your despot and stuff. Like that's the only thing I can really think of. But
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all our limits. So for reference, that was Astrogryph, Destrudo, Snow, Tiger, Alunalak Tiger, Recital Starling, Monster Gate, and Pot of Desires. Anything you think should have been put to one guy's quick take?
Fractal. I'm just gonna keep saying Fractal. I hate that card.
Yeah, Mystic
Meltdown.
Mystic Nine, yeah, keep coming on, guys.
All right, Semi Limits, aka Malicious as Friends.
Yeah, a bunch of spell cards.
We have five new additions to the Semi Limit list. Hero Lives from 1 to 2.
Good
this
card.
Is legitimately something that we've called for. I've called for every list. Like it just makes sense.
And then Fusion Destiny, boo.
Yeah, boo,
boo.
no.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Nadir Servant. That's the most OCG hit I've ever seen.
Nadir Servant. And Fusion Destiny to 2, we're just going to have to deal with less Invoke Dogmatica. I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah. Circle the 2. So that's a point for Joe. I believe Joe's actually got 2 points.
True. Did you not even say exactly Circle to 2?
Yeah, I did.
Let's go.
What else did you say? What was the other point?
I have it here.
IO banned.
Oh, yeah.
I have the thing pulled up so we can see who won.
So, like, I had. So,
yeah, Joe gets.
Off by one.
2 points. I think
you got half a point from Nadir, so you got 2.5.
Yeah.
I got nothing. And then Ruben got Protoss, just Protoss. So Joe, you won the painful choice. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
We're not done yet.
Yeah,
last thing was Scapegoat from 1 to 2. Hilarious.
Funky.
DM Staples. Yeah.
Speaking of DM Staples, off the hit.
Danger Nessie, a DM Staple.
Yeah, Danger Nessie, this makes sense. It is the worst of the three that is on the list. Searching one is not exactly that crazy. Skullcrobat Joker, speaking of searching one, it's a normal summon. Red MD received an errata, so it should have been off like months ago. E-Tally.
Silly one.
Called it. Obviously, you know, at the time of recording, I believe it wasn't confirmed. However, since we last recorded, it was confirmed to receive a collector's rare in Grand Creators. So why not make your chase card a chase rarity and at 3? Raigeki at 3. This one's super funny. It has not been at 3 since before ban lists were created.
Yeah, this card was put to 0 and then 1 for its entire life. It was at 3 when it was printed and then since then has not been free.
No, it got put to 1 in that first list, and then banned.
Yeah.
It went 3-1-0, nothing.
Ever since they could ban cards, this card was either banned or limited.
So it was limited.
I remember when this first came to 1, and it was like, what? You know, like, it was one of those big
2017?
Yeah, I think it was 17, might have been slightly earlier.
Nah, people were playing 18. People were playing Dark Hole.
No, I believe it was, like, back in... I remember Dauntless Alliance decks being around because like a lot of them were resilient to destruction, so it potentially could have been earlier. But
Raigeki OTS ulti was the same set as Karaz and Fog King, so that's kind of your time metric for.
I think it was around there that got unbanned, which is OTS pack 2.
OTS 2. And then speaking of a card that has now like at
Pepe
3
format,
Skill Drain. Again, Skill probably Drain. The most controversial. Yeah.
Joe, you happy about Skill Drain?
No.
No. No,
it's just like
I'm fine. I don't care.
No one's happy about it. This card could definitely have just stayed gone, and no one would be unhappy.
I think it doesn't push the trap decks to a point where they're going to dominate everything, and it does though is change the way we deck build a little bit, where we have to like kind of be aware now that Mystic Mind and Skill Drain are cards, and kind of side accordingly. So I guess it doesn't change all that much. It's just. When you don't have the out, it can just be like an IO in certain states, you know.
So I guess the counter argument is that Skill Drain is an archetype, whereas IO and Mystic Mind are very much decks or like just stupid floodgates that are impossible to out. Skill Drain was always kind of seen as a deck or a tech choice, like Skill Drain Cleeforts or Skill Drain Heroes, like Hero Beat with Barbaros.
I believe literally your old deck, Joe, was Skill Drain Barbaros.
So in like, that way, I can see Skill Drain as like a historic kind of, this was like a really cool thing, like a rogue deck back in the day when summoning a 3K and attacking under Skill Drain was enough. And while I think that's still pretty decent, I think you're right, Joe, that this won't push trap decks in any new interesting directions. This is literally just going to be an auto include in like every Eldritch deck, and that's it. Like, nothing else really changes.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's pretty boring. Like, cool.
Mm.
And it just makes it so... I mean, not that like there's massive big brain plays in Eldritch, but it just reduces them even further. And it becomes like a, look, I flip my skill drain and now I use this and attack you with my 2/5 beat stuff.
Yeah.
Moving on. You know, like, it's just so boring.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So that's the ban list.
Yeah.
Do we feel okay about it? Do we feel good about it?
Yes. I love this ban list. I think it was such a well-designed one.
How do you feel it compares to our one?
I mean, our one's always going to be a lot more fun, but...
I feel like it was good up until the end. Like, so some of... like, as in Skill Drain.
Right, I feel like just Skill Drain. Got you tilted.
If they left that off completely and were just, like, kept that at one, I feel like everyone would be like, wow, that was almost a perfect ban list. Like, but with it coming off... you know, it just leaves. It was like they gave us all the nice sweets, and then they at the end just chucked in something that tastes like shit. And like, you know, that's the only way I can really think of it. But yeah, I feel like overall it was a good ban list, and I commend them for the fact that they kind of took a bit of a plunge and like were like, you know what, let's try Fairy Tail Snow at one, let's try Distrudo Beck at one. Like, at least they're trying things, right? So I guess it was good in that way.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm fine. They've got product to sell that includes Skill Drain in it, so I don't mind. It makes sense. They've got Prosperities they need to sell, so Rip Desires. And
I personally have...
Really don't like that opinion.
Desires and Prosperity go in the same deck. Like, I think it's not a replaceable... I don't think they're not doing it to not sell product. I just think if you take a deck that played 3 Desires and go, oh, I guess I'll slap 3 Prosperities in there, you're going to have a rough time.
Yeah, especially say Sword Soul, because like you lose your Mo Yi, and that's like protecting your Cheng, Zhijiao, and like that's kind of a big thing. Like, you
but also going second, you lose your OTKs, which is Desire's best friend. Is like Desire's into 7 cards and to just kill you.
Yeah,
I don't disagree that it's like it can be for monetary reasons. I just think, you know, it's not like a 1-to-1 hit. That's like, oh, in the same way that Called By and Tactics seemed a little bit more close to home, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Prosperities.
All the pots are pretty different.
They are. Yeah. Prosperity, I feel like it does help with their... I guess it does and it doesn't, because like from a business standpoint, like Prosperity came out in Blazing Vortex, and that's quite a long time ago now. So like trying to find them now, it just makes the kind of secondary market thrive rather than Konami's market. So with like Skill Drain, like they've, you know, there's a potential for it being reprinted and Hidden Arsenal, you guys were saying.
It was a ripped to crack sheet. However, it was a DT Ultra sheet that included half of its artwork and a red eyes. Obviously, this is conjecture. This is rumor. However, it's pretty likely that in Hidden Arsenal Chapter 1, there will be a DT Ultra Skill Drain.
And that makes sense from Konami, because they've unlimited a card and then they printed it and they're like, come get this card. And that's going to get them money. If you bring off a card like Prosperity and they haven't got a reprint in the works, it just helps the secondary market, just, you know.
Okay, how about this? If Prosperity's in Ghost from the Past 2, then I will shut my mouth, because then there's 100% the greediest move. And this is not to do with game balance in the slightest. I just think maybe Desires is one of those powerhouse cards that could be a 1. I just personally think it does actually fit in that category. And we're past the point of Banish 10 being like a realistic cost.
It's not a cost.
It's not a cost. It's just Pot of Greed. Like, come on. It's Pot of Greed. Like, it's so unfair.
Anyway, something else.
Yeah, moving on from the from our ban list analysis, we like to look at the current decks or potential upcoming decks and their viability in the meta post February 7th ban list.
Yes.
So we've had quite a few events already that have occurred under this new rules. The PPG regional that has just concluded was run under this ban list, as well as the MBT Chalice Slime Monthly. Both these events also included Grand Creators because that has been out as of Thursday. So we have seen the incorporation of the Adventure Engine, the newest set, the newest engine to be released in Grand Creators that is truly proving its worth and holding its stamina in these kind of metas. So what we're going to do, our classic tier list here, we're going to take our opinions based on the decks that are presented in front of us and determine where we think they might fall in this meta going forward. I guess we'll start at the very beginning. Do we want to start at the beginning?
Yeah, let's start from the alphabetical beginning. I don't think that's the alphabetical beginning
cards.
I guess by ABC
for short.
Yeah, this is the alphabetical first in every single capacity.
It is A dot, so that would be correct. So it's ABC.
This would be Adventure ABC with three skill drain.
Yes.
I think where people are headed with this deck. Joe, you never played this deck, so
give us your fresh
opinion on it.
We could probably get Marshall on if he wanted to get some live opinions from someone who actually played the deck. I think Liam Gill, we were speaking to him today.
Liam Gill's played it. You never played it, right, Joe?
You've never played it, right?
No, I didn't win the first regional with this deck or anything like that. so, like, it definitely wasn't a structure deck. There was just some cool, like, ABC cards, but it's definitely...
Yeah, what set was it printed in? Was it Shining Victories, I think?
I think so.
I think it was a starter deck.
It was a secret,
I think,
right?
It was a starter deck, right?
This is dumb. Okay.
Yeah, moving on.
Our bits are terrible.
So this is the ABC engine. Obviously, nothing is hit for us here for the engine. OCG still have one Dragon Buster. Suck it.
They do, yeah.
Where do we think this falls? For reference, this deck won the Chalice Line Monthly.
Yeah. I think by definition makes it tier 3, right?
I mean, come on,
it's MBT's tournament. Like,
it's probably tier 3 or like potentially tier 2. Like, it's kind of one of those things where at the start of a format, something wacky happens and a deck will win. And then you'll never see it for the rest of the format. It potentially could fall into that.
That sounds likely.
Yeah.
I'd put it at tier 2. I think that the deck is really unique. It does a lot of funny things under skill drain, and utilizing the adventures is super cool. And I mean, upcoming Therians, this deck is even cooler as well. So I think that this is unique. It's a strategy that not a lot of people will have played, purely because the ability for the deck to succeed potentially has fallen out over time. And I think Adventure is really good. They'd never really had a normal summon, so...
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, why not give them one and give them an Omni Negate?
I guess the difficulty I have putting it in Tier 2 is I think Adventure is a really, really good engine.
I think Adventure is honestly 0.5. Like,
Adventure is up here, and I think putting Adventure in decks that weren't topping before is not going to make them tiered. Like, Adventure is really good in decks that were topping. So those, by definition, are just going to be better than APC, I think. Like, I feel like I'm pretty comfortable putting it in Tier 3.
I would say high tier 3.
Yeah, that's fine. Sure. I mean, any deck that can capably utilize Adventure is going to be good because it's like DPE. If you just kind of resolve it, you might win off the back of Adventure. Whatever else you're doing doesn't matter that much.
Yeah.
Drytron, tier 3. I don't feel comfortable putting this high. This deck got slaughtered.
They took a huge hit. Realistically, Drytron is probably the best Dagda DPE deck engine. But even then, like, that's not the strategy at all. It is rituals.
The trickiness I have with Drytron is that the more they hit, the more their restriction becomes kind of a hindrance.
Yes.
And it just means there's so much stuff you can't do that other unfair decks are playing now. You can't play Adventure. You can't play Aurorodon if you want to do proper, like, desk bot shenanigans. So realistically, what are you actually getting out of playing the Drytrons?
It has turned into, because I've been looking at builds, because I was like, kind of sad that I only got a little bit of time with it. I would put it more towards the higher end of tier 3. Like, if it, you know, like, because there are other things you can do with it. There's Megalith, which is like, I know they're not great, but they are like something else. Mm. There are some builds I've seen around with Vendrid Battlelord.
So you fade hand traps and stuff.
Yeah, you can like fade hand traps, or you can like turn off like, you know, spells traps. Like it's okay. Like it's not bad. Like, and I mean, we have to respect the fact that like there was a top 32 list that didn't run either in the main. In the YCS.
It did side it. That is absolutely correct.
I guess, as well, you can expect there be some list that just abuses Ben 10. And just adds the fairies to hand.
Yeah.
Well, a lot more pre-prep for Dawn of the Herald. Yeah. Like, that's kind of, I feel like, the way that this deck is evolving.
But I think Eva added such a ceiling to the deck. Like, the 20% chance you open it with Orange Light, it felt like just kept solidifying this deck in the top cut when it shouldn't be. I don't know, man. This deck got hit so bad.
Yeah, the other thing I will say about it, though, is it is the only deck, really, that can easily search Lancia. And Lancia is, insane in this format. So, like, that's why I'm saying it would teeter at Tier 3, Tier 2. That, like, it's in that line. Yeah.
Maybe I'll eat my words. I think this deck will kind of... it already wasn't topping a lot. And I think the more they take away, the harder that gets. When you look at all the decks that can DPE, Dagda, Scythe, people, this doesn't feel like the best one, personally.
Just bring Ben 10 back to free.
And right. Pendulum Magicians. Astrograph is back, baby. What do we think this does for the deck? It's had some success at a couple of unofficial events, I should say. Pendulum Magician. It top 32'd was Triff on it at PAX LCS. I think that was like 400 or 500 people played that one. Pretty significant. That was pre-Astrograph.
Similar to the fact of like, and I'm skipping ahead again.
I honestly put it tier three.
And the reason I'm saying it is it's similar with the whole like Triff argument to like what B Trooper is with Herman Hansen. Like, just because like there's like
he's two really good players with it.
That are really good, like, it doesn't make the deck insane. Like, overall, I'll keep it. I mean, top end of tier three, like, it's definitely gained more and it's consistent.
The deck that needs the most practice. You cannot pick up this deck and play. Like,
very pilot dependent.
It is so pilot dependent. It is so deck. It is so like meta knowledge dependent. You absolutely can't just pick up this deck and expect to have any semblance of winning without understanding the mechanics and how they work. One Astrograph is strong. Wavering Eyes, like I said, is now a legitimate payoff. Wavering Eyes Wars, I'm sure, will happen. I'm definitely not signing them because I don't think this is what I'll be seeing. However, Astrograph does add something really unique to the meta, and I think that it does give Pendulum another tool.
Yeah, I think there'll definitely be, at everyone's locals or events, there'll be one person who plays this deck like it's up here. They'll just be on another level, and everyone else trying to make it work, learning the combos, is just going to be down here in Tier 3.
Yeah,
Lyrilisk. Lyrilisk Tri-Brigade, Lyrilisk in general, I think is still Tier 2, personally. Yeah. I don't think it was absolutely murdered in the way that like some decks have been. Like, I think Drytron has been through multiple waves of pain at this point. This is this deck's first real hit.
Yeah, there were some pretty good hits. There were some good hits, but I do think that Lyrilisk by themselves are still very powerful. Obviously, Turquoise Cobalt still being a really incredible resource generation.
Yeah,
still synergizing really strongly with the Tri-Brigades, and again, kind of how it was in its earlier iteration, you didn't utilize as much of like the Recital Starlings. It was more, they were the winged beasts that you could put to grave quite quickly. They were easy Appaloosas. They were like faster board presence at the cost of pretty like little to nothing.
This deck went from 1 to 2. Like, I think that's fair. And it'll evolve. Like, there will be a new combo. Now that you don't have to make the Simorgling, you actually open up some opportunities to maybe fit Revolt into the deck. And that can be really scary. Very easily could just end on Utopic Draco, Ensemble, and Rugal with a set Revolt, which is actually really good. Should not be overlooked that is still possible with this deck, now that you don't make the bird that was objectively better than that.
Yeah.
But and still also, good.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, my friend Dave showed me a really good build for this. So, like, I feel like it's, still up there.
You've
got potential.
Turquoise Cobalt is still a freaking unbelievable.
It is potentially could still be an FTK. Oh no, one recital. Less likely.
If you open well,
Psychic Blade Turbo.
Alright, moving on. This is the first kind of adventure, I guess ABC as well. This is just adventure pile. So
it's bad.
Adventure Synchro. No, this is like adventure plus Aurora like, you're not really playing a deck, you're just playing good stuff, but you back it up with a Griffin Rider before you do it.
I would probably go 1.52. Like,
I don't think this is 1.5. It's good. It is good, but I don't think it. I think the stuff that combines it and has synergy is just going to be better.
I'd probably go 2 then. I think that the way that this deck plays and its interaction points are different to what is in the meta right now. People aren't on Ogres. People aren't on Lanciers at this moment in time. And those are two cards that really strongly hit this engine. Being able to establish an Omni Negate basically for nothing is incredible. I'm sure we'll get to further on. Some decks really need a generic discard outlet, and Fateful Adventure is just that. And I think that that's something that a lot of decks may not be potentially, you know, able to, were not something that they were able to access previously. At the cost of no normal summon effects, this isn't for every deck. Absolutely not. But the decks that can utilize it, I think, will be something to look out for.
Yep.
Because this does just add basically just some of the strongest insurance policies that you can for your deck before you even commit to your main engine plays.
Or like, or after. It actually doesn't matter. You can do like greedy as hell Hulk plays, go for the full Aurora online, which takes four monster zones, so you can't do it with a token on the field. And then if they nib you, you just go, cool, I'll summon a Griffin Rider and like set two cards and pass. Because everything in the deck, as far as I've seen with this, is one card engines, right? So you play like Deep Sea Diver or, you know, a quick Hulk engine that then, if that gets interrupted, you just go for adventure stuff or vice versa.
Mm.
This is fairly boring, but I think it is generally pretty good and sits in like the tier two category based on how consistent it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
B Trooper. I mean, it's got two top fours at a YCS, so it's tier
DPBs.
One.
DPBs.
Like, legitimately.
Okay. I absolutely disagree with you.
Legitimately has had multiple YCS, more YCS top fours than like Phantom Knights recently.
I think.
I mean, that's pilot dependent. But your same metric, then it can, like, you would be putting pendulums at a higher.
It doesn't have a high representation.
Nah, low tier two.
It's good, though.
It is very good.
But it's not good. It's just successful. That is not indicative of how strong a deck's engine is.
It gets better. I mean, we're really talking about how good Retaliating Sea and Sting Lancer are, right? And I think...
We're talking about how good Destroyer, Phoenix, Enforcer and Sting Lancer is.
Because you can put DPE in any deck, pretty much, and get away with it. The reason people play Bees is because you can search Retaliating Sea and Sting Lancer is a really good hand trap this format, right?
Yeah.
That's like the reason this deck topped. And I think by that metric, Retaliating Sea is going to stay good because it works against Wright. It still works against like many meta decks. I'm not saying it's tier one. I just think there's a reason. It's not just DPE is why this deck is good.
No.
It's Resonance Insect as well.
Resonance Insect, the fact that like that card reads so well and it's not once per turn. Like I've had obviously a bit of experience playing the deck. You would go through like, you can go through like triple Resonance Insect in one turn. And like, it's insane. Like, that's nuts.
Yep.
But the only thing I ever found was like the end board was never quite enough. And I know that's what DPE brought to it. But even then, it's kind of like the end board's still not as good as the top tier decks. And that's probably my argument to it. Sure, it has Retaliation C and that's like a bonus. But like, overall, you have to be a really good player to like do well with it. It's definitely a combo intensive deck that like if you mess one line up, you can, you know, easily lose the game. So it's a very hard
its success was from Herman Hansen and a copycat duelist.
Yeah,
that's
sure. But I think that it has merit as a DPE deck in a field of play the best deck or play DPE. I think picking Bees is like completely valid.
Potentially because of the fact that it, as well.
Yeah, well, it also like very well counters DPE, like as an engine out to DPE. Retaliating Sea is very strong, so I don't know. There's merit to it. Cyber Dragon, this is Rogue. What did they even get? Adventure tokens.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's like Cyber Dark. Cyber Dark is definitely, or like Cyber Dragon, Cyber Dark. Still really unique play style. Really, I mean, great with Nadir Servant. Obviously, unfortunately, that's gone to two. This is a unique deck. I think definitely Rogue. Strong in the right player.
One of those perpetual Rogue decks that will always just kill you sometimes.
Yes.
Machine Duplication is a hell of a card.
Yeah.
Eldritch. Yeah. This is 1.5.
Probably 1.5 or tier 1.
It fluctuates between the two. I don't know if it's... I don't think it's powerful enough to be tier 1.
I would disagree. I think it is strong enough to be powerful. I think it is. Because the existence of Lord of the Heavenly Prison as a 3K body that protects your back row has completely disincentivized any form of of destruction-based back row removal. Like, you see no lists, or next to no lists on destruction-based removal because of Lord. And that's also in tandem with the existence of something like Artifact Scythe. The way that they synergize so strongly is honestly crazy. And this is an adventures deck. This is another deck that can also negates down.
That's, I guess that's why I put it in tier 1.5, is because I don't know what the best Eldritch deck is. And I feel like the community doesn't know what the best Eldritch deck is. Is it the Synchro variant? Is it the DPE variant? Is it the Dogmatica variant? Is it the Adventure variant now? Like, it feels like Eldritch just goes in. It's kind of like Adventures, right? You just slap it into some strategies and it works because it's really good.
What I'll say is it's either going to be the top of tier 1.5 or the bottom of tier 1. Because naturally, like, it doesn't have a great going second, but at the same time, like, people set their boards up not expecting to, you know, the other player to, like, just go, okay, well, I'm just going to set five pass. You know, like, so they have monster negates, they have omni negates, but nothing really, like, apart from DPE, nothing really stops, like...
I'm not opposed to putting it tier 1. Five.
I think
I don't think it's ridiculous to call it tier 1, because it is the best trap deck of the format. So by that metric, I guess from a game balance perspective, they did just get 3 skill drain, which is probably going to be a big deal. Let's be real. Yeah, I could see it. But I mean, the skill drain build doesn't work as well with DPE or some of the other engines people play. So that might not even end up being the most popular build. But
not
we'll see.
To mention as well, but the deck is so easy to play. Like,
yeah, it is very popular for that reason.
And that's
very
good for like long tournaments and stuff. Like, if you just like were like, ah, well, you know, I don't really want to think for like a whole entire day, like 9-10 rounds. You can just pick up Eldritch, set your back row, and not really do a lot of thinking and do quite well. So,
Well, go second, you just side in Lava Golems and Kaijus and, you know, board breakers that don't really...
Three Raigeki.
Yeah, well, three Raigeki is very silly. I will lose to that too. I'll like set up the full board, 2 Omni Spell Trap negates, and they'll be like, Raigeki? I'm like, yeah, I'll negate that. Raigeki? I'll negate that. And they're like, Raigeki? Okay, cool, yeah. Nice game. Really fun. you know.
Yeah.
Prank Kids with Adventure.
Tier 1.5.
Yeah, this deck's...
This deck is succeeding very strongly. Connor, this is your redemption arc.
This is an uninteractive deck.
Yeah, wow, you cannot touch this. It is almost like soul drain worthy of like stopping this deck.
If you're going first.
If you're going first and boarding into it, because this deck is uninteractive. As soon as they put down something that's adventure based, their plays are insulated and it's kind of crazy.
Because for the longest time, Prank Kids have been able to chain block everything except the first effect they do. And now they just have a thing that protects the first effect that they do. It's so hard to interrupt that.
Yes. Connor, actually, I mean, Cheese TCG, top 8ed the Switch tournament with this deck. Got a little bit of controversy based on his number of Rite of Aramisias in deck. He was very partial to the Ghost Ogre inclusion. Which, like I said, is a potential for a tech going forward. However, this deck is nothing to joke about. This deck is very competent. And I believe it, again, top 16'd or potentially even top 8'd MBT's Chalice Slime Monthly. So this is an engine. This is a synergistic pairing that really is something to look out for in the hands of of a right player. But even then, like, it's not too... brain consuming, it's not too skill intensive. Obviously I might get roasted for saying this, but
it's like Salamangreat.
It's definitely something that the more you know, the better you are. While that metric could be applied for honestly every single deck here, Prank Kids is a bit more kind of user friendly.
I think it's like Salamangreat in that there is a very linear combo, but there's still quite a few of deceptive decision trees. Like in Salamangreat, it was always, what do you dump off Gazelle? What do you, you know, get into rotation? Do you prioritize the traps or do you need recursion? Do you need recovery? Like that game, that deck was always playing for the turn 4, turn 5. And I feel like Prank Kids are kind of similar where I'm seeing Connor start to adopt combos where you use the Fanzi's dump on like a second copy of Pandemonium or a second copy of Place so that next turn you can add it back and do all this stuff to kind of like stay in the game. So it is deceptively simple, but quite a nice deck to pick up, I think, if you're learning the game. Yeah.
Another player shout out as well would be to Andrew Dudson as well. Like, he's going to be scary with this deck. Like, because, I mean, we saw
that
him with,
play.
Yeah, with Mystic Mine, especially still at free. So
if you one consolation, Prank Kids with Adventures can't really play Mystic Mine because they will have the token on their field. Yeah. So, you know, some consolation there. Mm,
that's right.
Next up, this kind of breaks my heart because Thwanderese is like a week out from getting really cracked, but it's like bottom of tier 2.
I would honestly put it like mid tier 2. I think the dissolution of Luralisk Tri-Brigade and the redundancy or the lack of fairies in Drytron is prompting Droll to potentially leave the sideboard.
Yeah, also Barrier Statue got a lot better.
Yeah, Barrier Statue got a lot better. And Fluanderese is a deck that was really only crippled by its inability to find its cards and the existence of Droll.
Yeah.
And I think that those two things are being mitigated once Battle of Chaos and this ban list come into effect. I think Flaundries and the Advent of Adventures is exactly the card they needed.
Like here,
so I would put it at around low tier 1.5 with the premise that it is going to include the new card.
We'll wait. I mean, there'll be another tier list when that comes out sometime.
I mean, looking towards OCG, like I looked last night and Flaundries is right up there. Like it's tier one at the moment. Like,
and yeah, it's crazy. And not to mention the fact that Scythe Turbo is going to be one of the most popular decks.
And it just doesn't.
Nice one, buddy.
Yeah. So
good one. I throw away my extra deck. I don't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Wonder is post-batch is definitely could push even into the tier one.
Potentially. Yeah. Depends on how the format shakes up. It's not a very good deck going second into the adventure token stuff. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
For now. Cosmo, Rogue. Fun Rogue. 3E Tele. Tinkan Turbo.
3E Tele, baby.
Woo!
TCT, you can play.
I'll respect someone bringing this to a regional. I will. Greg, I'm not going to laugh at it.
This is a call out to Greg in particular. I would like to see you back at regionals playing Cosmo because this is absolutely the kind of the 3E Teles I would like to see.
Someone it's just good. Him. I mean, it's a good deck.
Someone tag him.
Yeah, tag out into a ship.
Yeah, tag out into pilot. Yeah, into
a ship. One other small thing I will say about Cosmo is they also really do benefit from DPE as well. Like the fact you can pop a Dark Destroyer and an opponent's monster and then float down. It's pretty cool.
Mm. Oh, does Dark Destroyer, is it only opponents can't destroy
it? Yes.
Oh, that's kind of
cannot be targeted or destroyed by your opponent's
card. That's kind of nice, Joe. That's kind of slick with it.
Yeah.
Heroes, Rogue. But again, cool. Two hero lives, really unique. To Diffusion Destiny, where...
Can we just watermark these two in the Rogue deck category? Because I feel like these two GX decks are just, like, eternally in this little Rogue category. hoping to get relevancy one day. You'll get the structure deck soon. Don't worry.
Yeah.
We'll be good.
I actually have our previous tier list up on the other screen at the moment. And we had heroes at tier 2 last time. So they have fallen...
Well... I mean, as according to Konami, it is a hero, a striker, and a hero.
That's true, actually. Let's put it in tier one, because DPE is the best card in the format.
Yeah.
Look, I still think heroes, like, do hang with these decks, like, for real.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not going to get above Rogue. No. I'm just, I love to pilot the deck.
Tri Brigade, unhit.
Tier one for pure try. I can't help it. This deck is still so good.
Yep.
It's so good. Like, DPE Tri Brigade got zero hits.
No. The only thing I'd say is...
One Fusion Destiny.
Yeah. It won our regional.
It might struggle into the Brave Engine a little bit, or Adventurer Engine.
Maybe.
Like, because its first, Omni. Effect is super, important. So, like, it does struggle versus Omni Negates, but I feel like it's still consistent enough to be a tier 1.
Yeah, I'd probably 1.5 it. I think high 1.5, above Prankids.
I think it's better than Eldritch. I'm not going to lie. I think Pure Tri Brigade will win more stuff than Eldritch.
Yeah, I think that's probably something to get hit. Salad Angrate. I think this is probably like tier 3, tier 2.
Yeah.
I like Salad. Two Circle. Actually, really nice.
And they have access to things. I mean, I've even seen people playing Adventure Salad Angrate because of Two Circle. Like,
They really don't need their normal summon
you
effect.
You really don't need the normal summon except for potentially Foxy. And even then, if your Two Circle can find you your Gazelle. That's you good.
I guess the only sadness is if you have to Staleo, you can't negate anymore. But Nibiru was always the joke of Salad, and that does help with the problem.
Mm-hmm. And again, Cross Art is still a viable card. So, that's also something.
Somewhere. Someone's playing it.
This is still the deck that can spit out an access code out of nowhere. So and an access code that can attack twice out of nowhere. So
guaranteed OTK is a big deal.
Yeah. Altergeist. I think probably tier 3. A lower tier 3, unfortunately.
It's cool with this 3 skill drain thing is cute with Protocol.
Pooh Query existing, your Hexias. Speaking with Marshall, who came...
10th?
10th or 9th?
Yeah, 9th was Keza, so 10th was Marshall.
Yeah, so 10th was Marshall. He's really enjoying the inclusion of Prime Banshee that's being utilized.
It's a really good deck. I just find it hard to compete with...
Not on the same caliber as something like Eldritch. I think that is the superior trap deck. However, the strategy is quite unique, and Protocol is really powerful when partnered with Skill Drain because it is a one-sided Skill Drain, and that deck can still play 3 Secret Village.
Right, Snow Lightsworns. I don't know.
I don't know much about the deck, unfortunately. However, it's not something that's crazy, and Lightsworn need more support that is not Twilight Sworn.
Nice mills, bruh.
V-Dub with Adventures. I would honestly put this at tier 1. So shady, Jay. It is so shady.
I got to disagree with you. If we put Pendulum in tier 3 based on pilot, I think this is not tier 1. No, I think this takes a really particular duelist to make viable.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But by the logic of like Pendulum being tier 3 because only good Pendulum players are going to make it look good, I think V-Dub, like, it is not going to be the set 5 pass or activate fractal deck that is going to dominate like the meta, in my opinion.
Sure.
Do you disagree? Do you think
I think it's fine. It's pilot dependent. It's absolutely pilot dependent. Honestly, you could go low tier 1, high tier 1.5. Like, you will see it.
Yeah.
And people have already played with it because it was quite good in the OCG. So to me, it makes sense to potentially see it in these higher tiers. But it could be a bit tough. Again, pilot dependent, and a lot of people, fear the V-Dub curse of brick hands.
Yeah. Which, let me tell you, those are the good hands, baby.
Yeah.
Don't ever doubt the brick hands. They're so good.
Moving on, Earth Machine, Rogue, funny, really cool strategy. It's seeing a lot of success on Duel Links. Oh, not Duel Links, Master Duel. So, you know, Diracrane, Lieber, Choo Choo.
It's old. Like, we've seen it all.
Yeah.
And when they get the Therian stuff, maybe I'll reconsider. I still think this deck is very pilot dependent. There are some people who can make this deck look killer.
Yeah, shout out to Isaac Robertson down in Christchurch.
Isaac Robertson, really, really good Earth Machine pilot. I don't know there's many others that I know of in New Zealand, but in most cases this deck like spins its wheels and then just loses to literally every top tier deck. So it's tough to put it above Rogue. I think it's better than like most of them though.
Twins, probably tier 3, tier 2. Twins are really strong, and I think that they are...
I'm comfy with tier 3.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice strategy. Obviously, we saw Jordan do quite well with it. One Desire's really seeing into the future with that deck profile.
I mean, one card normal summon engines. Pretty
still
good.
Strong.
Pretty strong. And that is this deck to a T.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dangers, or like Monster Rogue. Turbo, Rogue. Rogue.
Not good
it's
enough.
It's not scary anymore. It's just not scary.
If they put every danger to 3, maybe this starts to creep up as a strategy, but nah.
Also, please sell me Max Darkworld so I can play Danger Darkworld.
Phantom Knight. Last time we put this tier 1, it wasn't very good. Screw it. Let's just put it back up there again. Maybe this time people will play this deck.
I think one thing we oversaw last time, and the reason that, and I don't think we actually mentioned it, was that Protoss was a card because we hadn't really got to the point where Protoss hit the main deck of Sword Soul the whole time. And now there's no Protoss in like the most represented deck of the format. Phantom Knight could probably survive again, because I have to admit, when I played against Phantom Knight, all I did was summon a Protoss and go dark, and then they were like, okay, good game.
See you, though. Yep.
Yeah.
My one thing with Phantom Knight has always been that they don't have an in-engine spell trap negate. So they used to rely on Dragoon. Then it was DPE for a while to just pop problematic cards. And now it looks to be that Griffin Rider is going to take that role. And I think that's totally fine. I think it does crumble a little bit to the board breakers of the format, a little more than the decks that can set up more oppressive back row. Like Tri-Brigade Revolt just still, in my opinion, outclasses every other piece of back row in the game. I think Virtual getting access to Chuche, to Zhan Wu's, a lot of recursion, a lot of recovery. Phantom Knights, if you break the board, that kind of is it. I've seen them, you know, recover their Bardiche, try to combo after that, but they burn through so much on turn one that it's very hard for them to come back from it.
Yeah.
I don't think that makes the deck bad. Not by any means. And I think Scythe is an incredibly powerful card in this deck.
Raid
I just
engine.
Think yeah. I think the thing that held them back was like you activate Mystic Mind and they go, oh, next game. Like, they don't have an archetype out. They just lost Imperial Order, which was one of their best
quote-unquote answers.
Please don't break my board kind of cards. So maybe they put in anti-spells or something. But it always felt like the kind of deck that was just praying you didn't have it. You know, they do the whole thing and then go like, okay, do you have it? And then if you did, they go, cool, I lose. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas I think some of the other meta decks, like Sword Soul with Protoss, like Tri-Brigade, just had redundancy and could really recover. It's still probably the best combo deck of the format, I'd say.
Yeah. Notably, this deck is now 3 cards to start if you are on adventures, because Tour Guide cannot be played if you want to play adventure.
That's true.
So you
have to burn your Cherubini sometimes.
You do have to consider your extenders. Obviously, 3 Etali is a godsend for any level 3 strategy, such as PK. But the removal of Tour Guide in favor of Adventure can potentially be a bit more crippling than I think people give PK credit for. However, the strategy is still quite strong and can pivot quite easily depending on what's meta relevant.
This is probably the only deck that can afford to run like adventure and DPE and an engine and just play some like 46 card pile, which is kind of scary.
Yeah.
Next up, Punk, new release. It's definitely just Rogue. Ruben, I know you like this deck.
No, I really like it. It's Rogue now. It gets better in the future.
It's kind of gimmicky and it just falls to literally everything, unfortunately. Yep. It needs its normal summon effects, so yeah, it's just not happening. Striker's,
for now.
Striker's probably tier one.
I'd probably put Striker at tier one.
I think DPU Striker has pretty much topped every single major event.
Sorry, did you mean Hero Striker?
Hero Striker has topped pretty much every major event. It hasn't been winning a ton of them. Which maybe thinks maybe it's down here.
I mean, again, Sky Striker is hand dependent and it is pilot dependent.
It's a little bit high roll. Like your deck doesn't have a reliable backup plan if you don't draw the striker part.
If you don't draw both parts, you are on the back foot.
It kind of reminds me of Invoked Dogmatica when they only open a third or half of their deck. It's just so much worse. And Sky Striker very much feels like, Ray plus Fusion Destiny is insane. But it's a little high roll to expect to open that every game.
Mm.
So it struggles a little bit going first, but it is the best thing to be doing alongside DPE, I think.
I would agree.
One thing I'll say about Striker and Phantom Knight to that extent is like I'm kind of bored of seeing them up the top, but I have to agree with the fact that they are up the top. Like I just Eternal Format needs to die.
Like, it's coming back. We got two circles.
It's literally like Eternal about? Format is like trying to rear its ugly head again. Well, not ugly head, but you know what I mean. Like I don't know. I'm just kind of bored of playing against Striker. It doesn't help.
I think I got to move this down to 1.5.
Yeah, I think so.
It's high 1.5.
It feels like high 1.5, but like these three decks just seem better. Like if I sit down against Eldritch, I'm like, I got a good shot at this. If I sit down against like these decks and they win the die roll and just pop off, I'm dead. So there is that.
Invoked Variants.
Invoked Dogmatica.
Top of two.
Duff. It's like tier one probably, but I'm just going to put it here.
I'd probably put a 1.5.
Boring.
Two Nadir Servants is, you know, does hit the strategy.
Yeah.
Two Fusion Destiny hits the strategy. The existence of things like Adventure stopping Alistair's entirely is really powerful. I also just think like a lot more people are prepared for things like Winder, like the existence of Chalice, Droplets, Impermanence, like people are really ready to not lose to Winder.
Yeah.
And I think realistically that's where IDS is or Invoked Variants are really hurting. I think tier 1.5 is very comfortable because that deck does still keeps
going
to
keep winning events. Someone at an event will just draw an Adia Fusion Destiny every game, even though they're at two. It just feels that way.
They still have Schism, like, and that's a huge card. Like,
Yeah.
So, like, I agree with that. I was initially thinking too, but like the fact that Nadir Servant is still at two, it's not really.
It's not so bad.
It's not so
like
bad.
I'm less afraid of it because I don't think they're going to open the three card Exodia as much.
Yeah.
Shark Control,
probably tier three / Rogue. Like,
I think this is like goes and match. Kragan is still like stupid. So I'm not opposed to this being.
I'd probably keep it tier three.
The shark cards are nuts.
Is it better than say like Salad, Altergeist, and Drytron though?
It's better than Salad.
It would be better than Salad.
It's not better than Drytron.
So maybe
it's not better than ABC. I like a bottom of tier three, but I think this deck is real and you have to respect it. Mm. It's not exactly a deck that I mean, I guess it's Rogue, right? It's not a deck that I expect to see a ton of. But I do expect that when I play against it, it will be a real match. It's not going to be like, oh, if they sack me with the high roll like Hero or Cosmo, I guess, then I'll lose. Like, this deck's game plan is good enough to win a game. It is non-targeting Drydent plus Floodgates plus insane extenders, like some of the best extenders ever printed that really should not have been printed.
I think it's like very much like in the same area is like that, say Cyber Dragons or Heroes, where I've been on the other end of the table to Keza multiple times where he's like just ripped me apart,
kick your ass,
and I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, so like it's but then like if I sit down and I like come up against someone I don't know and they're playing Cyber Dragon, I
you're
might
not
respect it as much.
This deck is high roll, like you do need to open a pretty terminal mass of Kragan. Pass is not going to do it, but a terminal velocity of like good cards plus Kragan is insane. So I guess by that metric, it's high roll. Adventure Speedroids.
Rogue.
No idea. I'm just putting it in Rogue. I have no clue. This
it's
might be
cool. It's funky. It's fun. I mean, I've seen it kind of pop up here and there in terms of like its performances, but realistically, I don't think it's too crazy.
Yeah.
And again, like, it wasn't doing well before without Adventure. So again, by that metric, yeah, it's not exactly going to immediately slingshot to success.
Like, it might be as good as ABC. I literally have no idea.
Yeah, I unfortunately do not have a point of reference, unfortunately.
Sword Soul's still tier one.
I'd probably keep tier one. It is the best Go Second combo deck in the format.
Nothing got hit. Like, Protoss wasn't a Sword Soul card, and
Desires.
I was losing a lot more to... Desires, true. But I was losing a lot more to Sword Soul just OTKing me than I was losing to Protoss, let's be real. Those cards are still so cracked.
I believe it's the best Go Second combo deck in the format.
And it's evolved, as we've seen, into some kind of Hulk Auroradon pile, 46 card Sword Soul, Tenyi, Hulk stuff is really good. I mean, it just is. Moving on, Adventure Tenyi.
I think 1.5 or like 2. Like, I'd like to put it in 2. I think that...
I'd like to put it in 2, and I think this deck is scary as hell.
I think people don't know that this deck exists, and that's frightening, because Adventure Tenyi are sweeping Japan. Yeah.
For reference, this and Branded Albers in the OCG are the two best decks. Like, pretty much exactly the same amount of representation.
And that's with 2 Water Enchantress and 2 Rite in Japan.
They actually hit this deck, and people were like, that's fine. You ever read Vashuta? That card is crazy. Not to mention the token just acts as a non-effect monster for 10 years. Pretty crazy.
We'll mention that there are some Sword Soul cards like featured in the list as well. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's not...
They played like the long one, right? And
Iron and the long one.
Tyre's really strong.
But they play less of them because the adventure stuff is important going first.
Pretty
so
much
you
it's
mainly...
just getting rid of Mo Yi. Like, it's Mo Yi for adventures. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's fine. Like, that's it's a really unique strategy. I think it's really undervalued. And it, honestly, a good pilot in New Zealand will take Adventure Tenyi and just absolutely sweep an event because no one will understand how to interact with that deck.
I mean, I've owned the Tenyi core for ages, and I always thought they were cracked. The issue is the deck really sucked at going first, and this fixes that problem. You get an Omni, you get recovery. The Sword Soul stuff has added like payoff as well. You can make a Chi Zhao and just, you know, search a Tyre for next turn, sit on a negate. Seems pretty good. Sahasrara is actually an insane card because the Brave token just sits there as an on-effect monster, so Sahasrara is automatically turned on. You don't have to wait for your opponent to commit something to the board to have the non-effect monster to make your cards untargetable. So I think it's cracked. I legitimately think this is one of the best decks.
I think it's really high tier too. It's gonna take labbing and a pilot.
It might move up, honestly.
And I think at this moment in time, it's just underrepresented, but that'll, I think, change.
It feels like Bees in that, like, it's kind of the best thing to be doing with Adventure, but the deck itself is not very strong.
Mm.
But it kind of gets by on the fact that you can play Adventure plus stuff.
Yeah. Just like DP plus stuff.
Yeah.
Dragonlink. I'd probably keep this at 1.5. Realistically, they haven't lost anything.
They got Destrudo back.
Destrudo is back.
It's kind of
so
cool.
Shrine lines are a lot more fascinating.
This is like a viable snow deck as well. They like fill their graveyard and can play things like the Chaos Ruler Dragon of Chaotic. I literally don't remember that card's name, but the thing that mills 5 and excavates and you can add 1. What if you mill a snow? That would be funny.
The only...
Yeah.
The deck plays Foolish Burial, stuff like that.
I have the same opinion of this as I do with Striker and Phantom Knight. It's so boring. Just and Alistair Dot Deck. But it's definitely tier 1.5 until the Albert structure that comes out.
Also, G-Man's been insisting that Adventure Dragon Link is the absolute goo, and I'm kind of willing to believe him on that because they don't use their normal summon effects.
Literally, Black Metal Dragon is your best normal summon,
which doesn't need to use its effect when it's normal summoned.
Trap Tricks, I'd probably put tier 3.
I think this is Rogue. I don't think this is like better than most
of these.
I think
it's high Rogue. It's definitely
high Rogue.
Not...
High Rogue.
What did they didn't really get much.
I mean, it's still have Lord. Like, it's the same as the same concept. Like, the deck didn't really gain anything, but it surely didn't lose anything. Also,
it's not better than Geist.
It's not better than Geist.
No, and Geist is tier 3, so
you know, Lord and Alamaris, a lot of people are on, like, you know, Raigekis, so you can trigger Alamaris' effects. You know, there's a lot of plays with Trap Tricks, but potentially high Rogue / low tier 3. And then finally, Dinos.
Smaller events, but
Yeah. Dinos, I'd probably put
Rogue.
Tier 3 Rogue.
I'm I still respect dinos as a tier 3
because the scrap dino engine is still really powerful. Not to mention that dinomorphia are about to come out, and that can influence the deck's build.
Sets a counter trap from deck cannot be overlooked is very good.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely something to not overlook.
That's fair.
The scrap dino can still very easily get to your Appaloosa protection with Dolka, with a Lagia even.
Yep.
This deck is definitely something to look out for. And I think if more people kind of start cracking on with the dinomorphia strategy, I think dinosaurs could definitely creep up. It's just a new build of dino as opposed to the conventional baby Ovi lines.
So do you think, looking at the top list now, are these the four best decks or is something up? Are we messing up somewhere?
No.
Does this look correct?
I think it's...
Are these going to be... Yeah.
It's right, but, like, there could be movements. So, like, as in... Those
I'm
kind
of thinking Tri Brigade's too high now. I don't know why. It just feels like...
Yeah. I don't know. Like,
it doesn't feel like quite as scary.
It's not scary as the top frame. Maybe we put that tier 1.5 as well, like, in all honesty, because I feel like all those tier 1.5 decks are really good, but, like, the tier 1 decks that we have there are just, like, kind of another level up, in a way, you know? Like...
Yeah. I guess I feel almost that these are the decks that I feel comfortable saying will win stuff. And these are all the decks that I'm pretty comfortable saying are probably up here. Right? This is what the format kind of looks like. And it's just hard to determine out of these 9 decks which ones actually sit at the top of the roost. Because you might be right. V-Dub might actually end up being like the best deck. I just personally have been watching that deck be really good for several formats and like have no one play it. That's not fair. People have experimented with it, tried out different engines, and it's never like had that dominance that Sword Soul, Phantom Knight, Tri Brigade. I guess this hangs up in tier one. Like,
to be honest, like out of the four decks that would be up in tier one, Tri Brigade is the easiest to learn.
Yeah, like it's the simplest.
It's the most user friendly because PK is very combo knowledge dependent, Striker is meta and matchup dependent, and Sword Soul is build and tech dependent, whereas Tri Brigade it's the same bread and butter shtick with Revolt DPE and realistically that's fine.
The thing about Sword Soul, this is going to be the spiciest deck of tier one, which is hilarious because it's the most bread and butter combo, but I think that what will make Sword Soul crazy is like the 47 card E-Telly Hulk builds or the more Tenyi focused builds. Like those will be the things that spicily take top events. I don't think you can just like play Swords or cards as much because you don't have the backup plan of just summoning a Protoss and monkeying your way through top 8. Like, it's not quite as consistent.
The win button's gone.
Yeah, pretty much.
I came first after Swiss, but in that Wellington regional, and I probably summoned Protoss in like 50% of my games.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Like... It truly did spark the from your opponent when they see that. Even when it wasn't searched, and you're just like, it's like Block Dragon. You just start banishing from your graveyard and your opponent goes, you didn't have it. No.
Yeah, you didn't need to look for it. You just opened it. Great.
Yeah. That's how it felt playing Block Dragon back in the day. You'd start to banish because it wasn't a declared effect. And they just go like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on. Right. I tried so hard.
So just recapping. So in our tier list, we have at tier one, we have Phantom Knights, Tri Brigades, Sky Striker, and Sword Soul. At 1.5, we have Invoked Variants, Dragon Link, Prankid Adventures, Virtual World Adventures, and kind of Eldritch combos. Tier two, we have Adventure Tenyi, DPBs, Luralisk, Adventure good stuff, and Fluanderese. At tier three, we have Pendulum Magicians, Evil Twins, Drytron, Altergeist, ABC Adventures, Salamangreat, and Dinosaur. And then in Rogue, we have Trap Tricks, Shark or Water Control, Heroes, Cyber Dragons, Speedroids, or Speedroid Adventures, Earth Machine, Punk, Cosmo, Snowsworn, and Danger. Good stuff.
I feel like we may be being a little harsh on Drytron, but I don't know. I don't think it's going to do much. It does feel weird seeing it that low.
Yeah, next I think to Evil Twins, there's an archetype that came out in the same set.
That's true. Is Evil Twins now better than Drytron, finally, after getting nothing hit for 5 sets?
And getting support every single set?
Probably not.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
But that's fine.
Megalith is still good. Like, let's not be hasty about writing off Drytron.
Yeah. So overall, I think that the meta, again, still really diverse. I really think the biggest impact going forward is the existence of Adventure.
Woo, congratulations, Adventure.
Really already kind of cementing itself as a kind of staple engine in decks that can facilitate its utility.
It's like Crossout, but good.
Like, yeah, it's like cross out but extends.
Battle of Chaos is only really going to shift the meta around a tiny bit. Like, it's going to bring Flanderies. Flanderies about the only deck I can probably think of that can benefit from it. Sword Soldier, maybe Synchro Dinosaur. That might not even really be used. Dinosaur might come back up, like maybe to a tier two. Like,
yeah, Dinomorphia gets cracked later.
Dinomorphia.
It's been topping in the OCG with like the pure stuff, but yeah, it's a while away.
After it will have a much bigger impact.
It's quite tough because, like, we've seen Battle of Chaos, and I mean, spoiler alert, we could probably do a set analysis as another episode, but it's not really the hottest.
About 30 minutes of that, and then we'd be like, yeah, that's about it.
But Dimension Force is truly shaping up to be a set that a lot of people are interested in. It's, again, providing a lot of support for these, especially Dinomorphia. It actually gives it a really solid payoff. So it'd be interesting to see how that would impact, obviously, the Therians. Like, there definitely would see some shifts going forward with existence of cards in the in Dimension Force that we're not receiving until, I think, April or May. So I think that, this is a nice tier list for now. Again, the meta is super diverse still.
Yeah.
A lot of decks have the capability to succeed. And sorry. It's just
I was going to say sorry to Dino for not including Despia.
Yeah,
I did come second at the winner switch thing with like Despia.
Yeah,
which is sick.
But again, like that deck gets so cool in mid-April when like the structured it comes out. Like,
and they get their fusion from deck that does everything.
So I think that all in all, I think this is a cool meta to go forward to. I can understand your sentiments, Joe, of like it's a bit of the same.
It is hilarious after what was considered to be like quite a strong list that it is kind of the same decks. Like, let's be real, nothing really shifted. V-Dub went up a bit.
Birds and Drytron went down.
Birds and Drytron went down. I guess that could be considered a lot of change, but a lot of the boogeymen are still here. Like, Ray's still here. Alistair's still here. Well, it's a lot worse now, thankfully.
Oh, Flanderies.
Yeah. If Flanderies flips it, I'm less sad because they could literally play any Floodgate, I think. Still be just as annoying.
So I think, but talking about this list here is like, I feel like we'll see a massive shift in the next few sets and after the Albaz structure deck and a whole bunch of other things that like, potentially when we look at this in say another 3 or 4 months time, whenever the ban list comes out again, who knows, that it might shift a lot more. Like, I feel like maybe Sky Striker and Phantom Knight all of a sudden do get power crept a little bit, but it's hard to see at the moment. But like,
I'd also think maybe we're underestimating how much Adventure is going to mess up the format, and some of the decks that can't use it, like Tri Brigade, like Sword Soul, are going to fall out in favor of decks that can just like slam Rite and Water Sorceress into their deck and call it a day. It's possible.
It is possible. But I think all in all, what are your like final thoughts on this ban list and how it impacts the meta?
That wraps positive? Up the tier list.
Like, do we think that this is a nice, like, you know, based on the tier list, based on the, you know, our ban list reactions, how are we feeling for going forward into this new format?
I think I'm happy about 3 Etelli.
Yeah, Etelli is actually nuts. I think, like, that's a very underestimated thing that came off the list, like, because you're now seeing it in, like, multiple lists as, like, a psychic engine. And also, like, with Ghost Ogre, we're going to see that come back into the format heaps more because of the Adventure Token engine.
That feels very like 2018 for some reason, like the one does, Ghost Ogre just randomly thrown in with Etelli I like it. I think it's cool.
But I'm all for it. I think that I'm happy that Konami actually did something with the ban list for once, rather than just, hey, we changed 2 cards, move on. You know,
Here's an eroded card back to 3. Cool.
Yeah, so
I don't care.
I'm excited for it. I'm hoping that, like, obviously, I'm really looking forward to the freebie this weekend. I feel like that's going to be our first time of seeing the format in action.
That's our first post-ban list. We're going to play on the new ban list for that. So
Yeah. So and also about the freebie, we will be doing a podcast on the weekend of the freebie in person for the first time all together. So that's going to be...
We're going to get as many, maybe people you've heard on the podcast before, Dino, Connor, some of the local crew. Just slam everybody. It's going to be a good time. So make sure you tune in next week if you want to hear the best that New Zealand has to offer. And we certainly won't say things I'm going to have to scrub off of the podcast.
Yeah, and when we've got our 3 boxes of OTS 17 next week, we're going to be extremely happy and in a good mood. And the podcast is going to sound great. So
I mean, it sounds so much better when we go 10-0, right? Like, the audio quality just improves.
It does. But yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to that weekend.
And yes, so this is it. This is our kind of post-ban list, winners and losers, and tier list discussion podcast. As always, thank you so much to everyone who has listened. For those of you who are watching along with us on YouTube, please feel free to like, comment, subscribe, and share the video with a friend. It does help out a lot.
We hit 75 subscribers, actually. We're going to do something for 100, so keep tuned.
Yes, share it with your friends.
Yeah, share with your friends. At 100, we are going to be doing a giveaway. Not exactly sure what the terms of which are going to be, but we'll work that out when we get a little bit closer.
Yeah. And always, follow us on your preferred podcasting app if you are listening along to us, whether that's on your drives or your work days. And if you have any questions, queries, comments, or concerns or ruling questions, please feel free to email us at thefacedowns@gmail.com. We are aiming to do another Q&A section. I believe this is the third podcast in a row I've said that.
So the question, I guess I should say for the audience that listens, the question is, we want to know what card you think the printing of fundamentally changed the direction of Yu-Gi-Oh! For better or for worse. Something that you think, once it was printed irreversibly, changed or did damage to the game. You could think in the lines of the first hand trap, the first summon from deck, extra deck monster, something like that. We've already gotten a lot of really good responses, and we are looking to fill a whole podcast full of your lovely, lovely ideas.
And your insights as to what cards fundamentally changed Yu-Gi-Oh! Forever.
And if you really want to, come up to us at the Preview Free and let us know what card.
We've
been recognized twice this week.
So shout out to, I believe it was Ricky and Liam.
I think it was Ricky. If it wasn't you, Ricky, I'm sorry. It was very fast. We walked past.
We were walking in an airport with face masks on, so unfortunately we weren't able to get a good view. However, thank you so much to everyone that has come out and said hello. Obviously, like we said, thank you to everyone who came up to us at the regional. Thank you all for listening. As always, I'm Ruben.
I'm Lucas.
And I'm Joe.
And you have been listening to
The Face Sounds.
I went with this
classic. A classic one.
Nice speed.
Really good.